This episode is sponsored by GoodImpro Inc., a digital service provider that offers website designing, data analysis, and data visualization services. Do you want to get deep insight about your company and your industry? Are you ready to maximize the power of data? Then GoodImpro Inc. is your best bet. They can be contacted via this email address, hello@gprornc.com.ng. hello@gprornc.com.ng. Maximize data. Get ahead your competitors.
Do you know that non-governmental organizations are working ceaselessly to make the world a better place?
We see a future where young people are connected and act together as agents of change.
And you can be dreaming of children living in undeserved communities.
And I am well known for championing children's right to education.
Poverty alleviation, humanitarian aid.
Where every child, regardless of your geographical location,
healthcare,
socioeconomic status or religious background, will have access to quality education.
We are concerned about people's health and livelihood.
Leadership development and community development.
Yes. NGOs are working for the sustainability of all, especially the less privileged. Yes. Their voice deserves to be heard. NGO Podcast is the voice of NGOs. I am Jimo Oluwatobishegun. Stay tuned. Violence against young people, especially women and girls, is a grave violation of human rights. Its impact ranges from immediate long-term physical and mental consequences for young people, which includes death. It negatively affects their general well-being and prevents them from fully participating in the society. Violence not only has negative consequences for young people, but also their families, the community, and the country at large. This has a tremendous negative effect, ranging from greater healthcare, legal expenses, and losses in productivity, as well as impacting national budget and overall development of the nation as a whole. The Republic of Ghana, like every other country in Africa, has many young people who face violence every day. Hence, they need help physically, mentally, and emotionally. Welcome to the NGO Podcast Show, a podcast that brings the diverse and vigorous voices of global NGOs to people around the world. By engaging interviews with founders and leaders in the NGO community, troubling challenges, opportunities, and best practices. And I am your host. I am Jimo Oluwatobishegun. You can simply call me JOS. I'm super excited to be back again. Welcome back. On this episode, I am glad to welcome Asmao Yakub, a peer educator and a counselor who has worked with many young people in Ghana for the past 10 years. She is the executive director of Raiwa Foundation, a community youth-led non-government organization that focuses on improving community well-being and eliminating violence, especially those affected by girls and children. Of course, she is my first guest, all the way from Ghana. Make some noise! Chale, 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 one more. But I'm super excited to welcome Asmao to the studio today to be my first guest from Ghana. Hi, Asmao.
Hi, Jimo.
Thank
you for having me.
You are the first person. We are the first guest from Ghana on the NGO podcast show.
Oh, how do you feel? Thank you. Amazing, that feels great.
Amazing. So, would you please mind filling the gap, fill some gap, and tell the audience about you and what you do?
Okay, so my name is Asmao Ayub, rightly said. I'm a licensed counseling psychologist, and then also the founder of Raiwa Foundation. So I believe you might be familiar with the term Raiwa being a Nigerian. So it's just the Hausa term for life. And literally, it's because of the kind of communities that we serve here in Ghana. Like I said, I'm also, apart from being a psychologist, I work as a school counselor, so I'm an educator and very passionate about education, as well as really looking at what are the gaps that are being currently experienced when it comes to achieving complete access and equity in education. So that has always been my passion, and then looking at to how to fill those gaps and then ensure that we are getting not just an education, but really a quality education.
Wow, that's super amazing as well. I'm pretty sure that listeners are clamoring to know much more about your organization, because the brief you give, it
much more about you and what you do and your experiences, your interests and stuff like that. So would you mind telling the audience about the organization in comprehensive detail?
Okay, so Rayuwa Foundation, registered and community-based NGO in Ghana here. Our work is mainly centered in the capital city, in the inner cities, inner communities, such what we would refer to as slums, and then also a bit of other communities across the capital city. We also do work in rural communities up north. We have trained lot of young people. In one of our main flagship program, it's the peer counseling program. So basically the history behind this is, as a passion growing up, I did mention earlier, I always try to look at what was the reason why people would stay out of school, what was the reason why people had less interest in school. There are multiple reasons to that, and of course not one person could do it all, or not one person could serve it all. So I looked at my own strength, and then I look at what part of that gap can I also fill in, can I close? And I had very like-minded people like myself. So we kind of started this foundation with young professionals like myself and other young professionals. And all we were looking at is what were some of the reasons. So one of the reasons, or a number of the reasons that we pulled out, was one, identity issues. So at teenage, there is the issue of identity crisis. People, young people were kind of confused who they were, how they fit into society, how they fit into what family demands were in the school, how they were really trying to identify who they were. So that just, that confusion, and being a school counselor, I thought of, saw a lot of that going on with my own students, and I felt we need to quickly close that gap, because that, if not well addressed, led into a lot of crisis or issues for these young people. So the interest basically started from there, and we started to roll a training. So it started as a passion, and there was really not a formalized structure to it. All I wanted to do, and the people I was able to draw with myself, was just to deliver some sort of a capacity building trainings. But as time grew, in 2012, we formalized the structure, had a whole model and merge out to the whole program, and then called it the peer counseling, community peer counseling training. And so what we try to do is to look at the less served communities. So initially in 2012 up to about 2015, we only used to train girls, but there was more demand. And the only reason was because we felt they were more in need of the trainings we were given. But as time grew, we realized we were living a very important part of the gender, and so we quickly included the boys. And so at the moment we do training for both boys and girls. It's a complete training, and the training has grown from just high school students to actually university students. The last training we did last year, we had university graduates as part of the participants to be trained. And one key thing we try to focus on, this is mental health. This is an area that is less spoken about. This is an area that is less addressed. And so as young as they are, we try to ensure that you're not only concerned about growth, physical activities, but you pay attention, particular attention to how your brain is growing with you. How are your thoughts like? How is your feelings like? So don't just create wealth. Don't just be focused about getting it all, but losing your own self. So what we try to remind them is, if you earn it all and you lose yourself, who's going to benefit at the end of the day, or who's losing at the end of the day? So this is basically what Raya Foundation has, flagship program has been. So we do this training in schools, and also do it in the at the community-based level. So basically we do this during vacations, long breaks, and the long university breaks, like in August, like same time. This is the time that we usually run our training programs. I'll tell you more details about how we have broken out of just the group we started with, and I'm sure there'll be more questions that you might be throwing out, and so I would get to respond to those in bit.
Definitely, Asmao. I think but what got me interested very much is the zeal for the marginalized community. I think starting from the marginalized community, I'm pretty sure that maybe there's a story attached to like starting with a marginalized community. You know, you've grown far beyond community base to high school students in the city and people at a tertiary institution and whole lot of more. But I don't know, do you have a story attached to like I'm working with people at a marginalized and underserved community? Because on your website and more of what you guys said you do is you work with marginalized and underserved communities to empower them, eradicate violence and promote holistic community well-being. Why this? Would you mind sharing some more in-depth information about working with people at a marginalized community and empowering them to eradicate violence and promoting holistic community well-being?
Okay, absolutely. Thank you. So why we have this focus is because we have realized that over the past years, there has been a lot of support going on here and there at the capital city. If we look at the poverty gap, you can clearly say that people who live in the capital city are much more better off. But at the same time, there was something that was not being seen, which is at the blind side of most people who are into community-based activities, which is the continuous or the evolving nature or the growth of inner cities. So this is what happens. The whole capital city is being seen as, oh, this is a capital city, and so they are fine. And then a lot of support are being thrown at the rural communities. Yes, there is a lot of support that is needed there. But at the same time, the influx of rural urban migration has created and continuously creates rural settings within the urban communities. So this is what we thought, that no, we needed, somebody needed to address this. Otherwise, we're going to have the same growing number of less privileged people within the urban centers, which are not seen. So what we decided to do initially or from the beginning was reach out to these communities, majority of which are coming from the same rural communities. You get the point. So these are people that settle within the capital city but migrated from the rural communities. And they are rarely seen, they're really discussed, they form in suburbs like some sort of slums that are across the regions, that are across the capital. So these are our target communities, because these are communities that there are usually more violence attacks, there's a lot of violation of rights against children. And this has actually led us to start a campaign on child protection, which we started in 2015. And we had a great success of a media launch campaign to just bring awareness about the issues that affect children generally. And until date, we have child protection clubs running through schools, some selected schools within such small communities that are really less represented at the table. And we want to be the voice of such communities, irrespective there is no religion or anything as such attached to the groups. But sometimes, based on the community that we serve, there might be some religious dominance, but it really doesn't affect our work. What we do is, it's the target, the people that we want to reach out to. So these are interest areas. So aside our work we do outside the capital city, we are also very much focused on inner settlement within the capital city as well. So this is basically our work targeting at ensuring that there is less violence perpetrated within those communities. Because one of the major issues is these communities are really clumsy. And as you can tell, where there are a lot of people trying to share small space, there is likely to be more conflict and violence within those communities. And hardly do people ever talk about it, because everything just stays where it happens. And so there needs to be a lot of awareness creation. There needs to be a lot of access there. And a number of the children as well are not in school. Some are in school and they lose focus and lose interest because of lack of support. So one of our main basic interests is to create that kind of network of social support for students within these communities. Yes, there is free access to education, but that is not enough. just pushing a child into school is not enough. They need a lot of support system to stay in school. You need to address issues of poverty. How do you do that? We engage parents. We do empowerment programs with parents. We are able to connect them to access and resources that would support them so they can help their children to stay in school. So basically, this is like a summary of the kind of network of support that we try to create and then deliver to these communities.
This is super interesting, Asmal. I really have a special interest in people at the grassroots level, people in the UNICEF community, because most of these people, like you rightly said, they hardly talk about at the table. Their voices are barely heard by policymakers and people that can really provide solutions. Good work you do, Asmal.
Thank you. So moving forward,
I'm pretty sure that from what I deduced from our conversation in the past 10 minutes, I can pretty say that violence, like eradicating violence, is one of the core focus of Rayuwa Foundation. And you may mention of violence against children, violence against the girls' rights, violence against young people in general. But this is the question I would like to ask. We know that violence is everywhere. Violence is everywhere. Violence is in Nigeria, is in Uganda, most especially in Africa, and every other part of the world. But in the context of Ghana now, because your work is focused much more on Ghana, so let me use that as the question. So in the context of Ghana, what is the rate of violence among youth? And what can you say is the cause of this violence? And how do you think the violence can be curbed and reduced? Because you said that eradicating violence is one of the core, if not the core of what you guys do at Rayuwa Foundation. What is the rate of violence among youth in Ghana? What is the causes? And how do you think this can be curbed or reduced as well?
Okay, so I can say in confidence that it's not at a very high risk level, and our focus is preventive measures, providing preventive measures, and so we don't have to wait until all is tough or it's been escalated into something that is uncontrollable. And so we do a lot of preventive measures. As part of our peer counseling training, for example, we have a whole model on conflict resolution and violence prevention. And our facilitator is a well-grounded professional that has worked over the years, for the past over 12, 15 years, in conflict management across all the conflict prone regions in Africa. And so this is basically how we try to let our young people see the effect of conflict and violence. And so we try to do a lot of prevention by creating awareness and then making them aware that you don't have to get here. If you don't want to see yourself there, then you probably wouldn't even want to start this. And when it comes to children, the violence we're trying to protect, there's a lot of violation of rights of children in different spheres. When you deny children access to education, you're violating their rights. When there is a family conflict, then children are the ones that are mostly affected. Usually, if there is a breakup and a divorce, they are usually turned between who is going to take care of them. Our systems have tried, but they're not very supportive when it comes to providing shelter, even for children. So we tend to have children on the streets, and you're wondering who has access to them, who's their parent, who's their family. So these are all things that we are trying as much as we can in our capacity to support and to prevent. And so we take our participant through a training that sort of grounds them and provide them with the soft skills and social skills in order that they are able to reach out to their own community. So they're kind of scattered across the regions, and if they identify anything that beyond them, then they escalate it. Now, the causes are very diverse. It can span from family misunderstandings. It can be from a regional point. It can be from a national point. So it's really not easy to just point at one-sided angle to say this is the biggest cost of it. But our interest is always at the family level. So our interest is engaging families, engaging the young people in the family, engaging the children in the family, and then engaging the parent as well. So it's a triangular kind of training that we try to give. When we engage the teenagers in the family, then we see what support system are we giving to the children. And then when you are engaging children, obviously you need to engage the parent as well. So at the end of the day, we want to sustain families. We want families to stay together. We want families to appreciate their own well-being. And when families are set right, then automatically and obviously societies get better. So this is basically our focus area. We are working more with families than at regional and national levels.
Wow, that's great, Asmal. Yeah, you've really been fantastically well. So moving forward, yeah, you started this organization roughly sometimes around 2011, before 2010 or so, before you incorporated it.
Yeah, 2012.
Yes, 2012. Mm-hmm. So this is 2019, and I'm pretty sure it's roughly 6 to 7 years that you started and you've been operating fully functioning. So, would you mind sharing some of the organization programs with the listener, and what are your indices of success over the years?
Okay, so it's not been an easy journey. Like I mentioned earlier, when the whole organization started, it kind of started like a passion, because it was just a question we asked ourselves: what can we do other than just staying as professionals? How do we give back to community? How do we give back to the community that trained us? And then that was just how it all started. So interestingly and very funny, it really didn't have a structure to it. It just started operating, and then we just kept going and going and going until we had to say, hey, let's take a break. It looks like we've just been going without such a formal structure. And that just tells you how passionate we were just trying to do this. And this is pretty much very familiar to a number of organizations that start as well. So this is our own hard way of lesson learned. So we had to let's take a break now. We are really passionate into doing this, but we need to measure how much impact we are making. And so over the past few years, we've put up a good structure to this. We have a team of volunteers that are on call anytime we have projects. And then we have at least 3 to 5 support staff that are always there, always doing the underground work, always trying to see where can we reach out to, how far can we go, because it's a big community. There are multiples. We do have invitations to run trainings, our training, because of the impacts that we are making and the feedbacks from our peer counselors. They're really doing marvelously well. Like I mentioned, mental health is like the umbrella of all of these, but our training span beyond just mental health. Anything that affects the well-being of the individual obviously is directly linked to your mental health. So we cut across, basically it's a holistic training that affects the general well-being of any individual. So our peer counselors have been great so far. We have social network systems where we have all of our peer counselors together. We do share challenges and stories and any issues that they face. If they are able to handle the issue at their own level, with their own peers, with their own capacity, then that solves it. If they are unable to, then they escalate it to the professional. So I have a network of professionals that are working with me. We escalate the issue, and then we deal with it. One interesting area I might want to share with you, it's issue of suicide among teenagers in Ghana here, and I read across other African countries, there is increasingly high rate of suicide among young people. And this is because they are unable to handle their own frustrations. They lack the capacity to deal with the issues that come across them. They are unable to deal with the issues. Even all they need is just a little bit more training that, hey, you can do this. Like, they just need to build up their capacity. So this is what we do with our peer counselors, and get them really well grounded to support themselves and also to support their peers that may need their assistance. So one thing is that they help to escalate such issues. For example, they are all over social media, whatever they spot, and then they have a way of, we call it the eagle eye. They are able to read in between the lines faster than any ordinary person may be able to read. So they're kind of co-counselors, kind of being able to read through and say, no, this doesn't look right. We need, this person might need an assistance. Something that somebody might just read and laugh over. Our peer counselors would rarely read a threatening situation and laugh about it. So they draw attention to it and then quickly try to get into the inbox of the person, even if it's just a stranger, and try to give a support to the person, just to reach out and see, where can we come in? Can we help? There is something to do. And at times, if they are able to help the person to come down, then they connect the person to the professionals, and then we pick it up from there. So this has been one of our very great indexes of success we've had. We've had numerous cases, but as well, these are very confidential informations that we do not send out into the public because of the confidentiality. So I can only give you a generic view of how much we have done in that regard without mentioning names or even giving you locations of such people that we have reached out to. Some of them have actually come back to be trained as peer counselors now, and they are working with us. And aside that, one other interesting successes has been child protection training. Our child protection training has won the admiration of UNICEF Ghana, for example, and I was called to participate in the whole week training on child protection. And obviously, since then, we've had a very great network of support from UNICEF Child Protection. So basically, this is just to share the excitement of our work. And like I did say, it's the passion that keeps us going. But now it's a passion plus a structure as well. So basically, just yeah.
That's quite interesting as well. I'm really excited with those stories you shared. You know, you said there are some you haven't put out there because it's confidential. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm pretty sure that anyone listening to this will see, wow, Rayo Foundation are doing fantastically well, this and that. Of course, they will definitely get more in-depth. You know, there are some limits to what we can do in writing, to what we can do in speaking, you understand. So that's quite amazing as well. I give you a thumbs up and a round of applause. So now,
thank you so much.
In the last 7 years, you've been working and you've shared some of the indices of success. Would you mind sharing with the listener how you've been able to manage the organization in terms of funding, human capacity, and external factors, challenges here and there, the acceptance in the community, the acceptance by the general public and stuff like that? How have you been able to manage the organization over the last 7 years, Asma?
Okay, so over the past, it's been a mixture of great stories, ups and downs here and there, just like with any young growing organization. One of our biggest structure is all of the leadership. We are all fully employed, so everybody is fully working. And so this is, like I keep repeating, a passion that makes us all steal time from our busy schedules and then ensure that we are just not engulfed in just what gives us our own personal incomes, but then we give back. And so funding started for us from our own coffers. I mean, we are still doing it anyway. We still try to pull resources from our own selves. We deliver trainings absolutely for free, and then we also try to pull our own funding. But in the past few years, we've had funding support from external donors, from international and then local organizations that have partnered with us to run some of this training. So it's been great so far, but like Oliver Twist, there's always the room for more funding and support, because there's a lot of follow-ups from other young people who keep saying, can you come and run the training here? They need the training to be run in other regions, because it's a specialized training that we have designed and then we deliver. So we deliver it, we travel by ourselves, and then we deliver the whole training and we stay in touch with this peers. We ensure that it's a continuous, like it's a lifetime mentorship that we give to them. So it definitely needs a lot of resources to be able to do, to cover a bigger scope. So that has been one of our biggest challenge, being able to replicate this training as fast as we want to reach out to more young people across the country has been one of our biggest challenge due to lack of support and then lack of funding. One thing that we are passionate about is just give us a call, support or fund the training, and then we are there to deliver. So we are not really interested in saying, oh, we want the money and then we are going to know, just set the whole place for us and then we would deliver. So basically that has been one of that way of drawing collaboration from other organizations and then other support groups. So it's been wonderful so far. I mean, we are still growing. There's a lot more we can do. There's a lot more young people we can reach out to, and there's a lot more children and families that we can help sustain them and ensure that the families stay together other than breaking apart.
Wow, that's great, Asmal. I'm super excited with what you shared with me. You didn't cover something which I'm still going to ask. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you may mention of the challenges, like the greatest challenges, but this challenge is how were you able to overcome this challenge? What is there any strategies you use? Is there something you do one way or the other? You know, I'm pretty sure people listening to this, people who are interested in the social sector, people that are interested in the NGO sector and stuff like that, that day to day they may be in your shoe presently. Who knows? So how do you overcame that challenge in the challenges you faced while starting the organization or on the course of running the organization? How do you overcome that?
Okay, so interestingly, one thing that I have noticed with startups is everybody is crazy about doing it big immediately. I am not a fan of doing it big. I am a fan of doing it little steps, doing it small, and then making impact. And so one way that we have managed our challenge, especially with funding and resources in the past years until now, it's not to look at how many peer counselors we are training, but how impactful are the ones we are training, being able to develop themselves, be better off. How are they able to start up their own journeys? How are they able to have that mental stability so they can grow? Because remember, if you're not functioning properly in the head, then there is definitely no way out for you in anything at all. You can talk about entrepreneurship, you can talk about academics. There is just no life. Your life just is stuck. So that's why the focus is right there in the head. Get the head working right. Get thinking straight and then explore as wild as your imaginations can be. So we have looked at or dealt with these challenges by really growing our numbers in small bits. So there are certain years that we are able to train a very large number, like 45. There are certain years we had to train just 10. For example, I think somewhere in 2014 or 15, thereabout, we had to train just 2015 specifically, we had to train just 10 peer counselors that year because it was a big challenge for us with regards to timing and the resources. But we didn't want to say we were not training anyone at all. So our target is to train 30 at a go. But if we can't do that for any difficult reason, then we cut it down. So we are more concerned about dealing with these challenges. Yes, there are challenges, but what prospects are there within those challenges? So that is our focus area. We're very optimistic. We love what we do. We are a team. We are energetic. We just keep going. And so as much as we can give, we give what we can give. And then it's always better to give something than to give nothing. So that would be a very important way to just revert your challenges into beautiful successes, because somebody might read the very little that you have done and then be able to see through that you can do bigger, giving opportunities, and then would come in to support you. It's rather better than saying, I can't do this, I don't have that much resources, and so I am not doing it at all. So it's great to just do something. So this is how we have managed our challenges over the past years. It's been like a roller coaster. We go up high, we slope down, and then go up high again. But it's been fun all through. We laugh about it and we make jokes about it and say, well, this is where we are, and then we appreciate it all.
Wow, that's quite interesting. pretty sure that anyone listening to this, I've definitely learned something, which is to take it bit by bit. Don't be concerned, very much concerned about the big numbers and stuff like that. But at least start with what you have, the little you have, or how you build your name, right?
Right, absolutely.
Before I let you go, Asma, it's been an amazing time speaking with you. Like, I even thought we could do this for like 15 to 20 minutes, but we're getting over to 30 minutes now. That's quite interesting. But before I let you go, Asma, what is your advice to every young person, let's say every people or every young person listening to this right now? That's one. That's your advice to every young person listening to this, because I know you're young, and you're young, you're strong, you're vibrant, you're energetic. What's your advice to every young person listening to this now? And two, what is your lasting words to everyone listening to this, or people that share similar passion as yours?
Okay, so I have a lot of mentees. I said I am a school counselor, so you can imagine working in a school field and then as well as a community-based youth activist. I'm a mother myself of young three children. I have three girls, so I mean they are my energy behind how I just keep going. So they give me a reason to say, no, I need to do more in the community than just sit home and take care of my family. So basically, what I would say is to any young person listening to us is self-belief is very important. That no matter how much anybody tells you, no matter how good somebody says you are, or no matter how silly somebody says you are, it's at the point becomes a reality when you ingest that feeling into yourself. And so you need to learn to differentiate what is coming to you as chaff and what is important that you take. And that brings us to emotional intelligence. It's not an easy place to reach, but it is a training that you give to yourself. You need to learn to know, how do you filter between what is important and what is not important? Because over the past years that I have worked with young people, over the past 10 years, what I see is the inability to really find their space, to find who they are. People are interested in just jumping into the shadows of others. People are interested in just following up with others without really assessing how did they start, what was the whole history behind who they are. Because if you do not access that, if you don't appreciate how it all started for them, then you have no idea where you are heading towards. So appreciate, and this is only done at an individual level. You need to appreciate who you are, you need to appreciate what future you want for your own self, and then gear towards that. So that is particularly what I'd want to share. The four C's is something we always train our peer counselors on: critical thinking, communication skills, learning to collaborate. When you find somebody doing something similar to what you're doing, open up, let them be aware of what you're doing. Find a space or find a grounds where both of you can connect and work together. And creativity, be real, be genuine, believe in who you are. There is always something unique about every individual. I mean, there is something unique about everybody. Everybody has something that nobody else has, which is just like a thumbprint, is unique to you. Find that gem inside of you, find that unique identity inside of you, and don't just jump into trying to be anybody else, but just be who you are. Those are my few words
that
I've
shared. Thank you so much, Asma. Personally, I've learned from that because I'm a young person as well. Thank you so much. So before I let you go,
thank you so much.
How do you think your organization can be supported? Where many listeners to this podcast from different parts of the world, how do you think they can support your organization? And please share your contact details with the listener.
Alright, so if you want to, we are open for collaboration. Like I did say, collaboration is very important too. We are open to for collaboration. Our work is mainly centered on adolescents, ensuring that we give them all of the tools that they need to stay in school. If they're not in school and they wish to learn a vocation, how are we able to sustain them? So this is our main focus on working with young people, and especially in marginalized communities. So if you have the passion to give back to any community you feel are less represented, then you might want to connect with us, and you can connect with us via info@rayuafoundation.org. info@rayuafoundation.org. You can find us on all social media handles, Rayua Foundation. We are on Facebook, we are on Twitter, and then soon we'll be on Instagram. Sorry, we're not on Instagram yet, but we will be on very active. Yeah, we are very active on Facebook, and you can also check us on our website, www.rayuafoundation.org. And if you want to reach us via WhatsApp, you can reach us +233 244-215-695. That's our direct contact, and you can reach us in Ghana as well. Thank you so much, Jimo, for this opportunity.
Thank you so much, Asmao. I really, really enjoyed myself. Like, this interview was so amazing. No dull moment at all. So let me, is it Chale or what? Chale, right? Thank you so much.
And I mean, you're doing amazing. You're doing amazing to give it a young growing organization this beautiful platform of yours. I mean, thumbs up to you too. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Welcome back, guys. Thank you so much for staying tuned. I'm super excited to have an highly esteemed personnel like you listening to this podcast, especially this episode. I mean, this special episode that featured the first guest all the way from Ghana. Like, I'm super excited. Chale, are you excited? So, to support our partner, to support our partner with the organization that was featured on this episode of the podcast, Rayua Foundation, kindly visit their website to get their contact details and to know ways you can support them, to check their gallery and most of the projects. www.rayuafoundation.org, which is spelled as www.rayuafoundation.org. RayuaFoundation.org. They'll definitely be glad to hear from you. For advert placement on this podcast, or you have any other inquiries about this podcast as well, or you can support us, kindly send me an email, jimoh@ngopodcast.com.ng, which is spelled as jimoh@ngopodcast.com.ng. jimoh@ngopodcast.com.ng. I'll definitely be glad to read from you. And I'm drawing cutting on today's episode, but don't forget, you have a vital role to play in the human race. Government cannot do it all for you. Be ready to do yours. I will be back with another amazing guest on the next episode. Till then, keep impacting lives in your own little way. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.